Hello and welcome to recording number 26 of Gary Gygax's Artifact of Evil, an annotated reading. Today is August 22nd, 2021. All right, previously we've had Gord, Geller, and Chirk go into the Vesvi Forest where they're hunting for Obmi. Now they pretended in the nearby village of Tushim to be pig hunters, because there's a big, I guess, colony herd of wild boars in the area. So they're boar hunters. And these two young boys have followed them in and run away from their apprenticeships, which is a very big deal. And so Gord and Geller and we're trying to figure out ways that they could return, but it really looks like that they have to take them along with them. So I am going to restart right here, and it is page 242 and the fourth paragraph from the bottom. Neither Thatch nor Shad could ride very well, but the two young adventurers gave them their turns atop their mounts anyway. This way you'll learn, for learn you must, Gord scolded the reluctant boys. It'll spare your arses some too, said Chirk with a laugh, as he recalled the pain of becoming accustomed to the saddle. During the brief pause to get bearings, eat and rest, the lads were instructed in the proper handling of the broad-bladed cross-pierced spears they lugged along. Each weapon consisted of a stout shaft, one of hickory, the other of hornwood. The spears were taller than the lads, but not by much, for each was just a little over 5.5 feet long. What the weapons lacked in length, they made up in girth, for the shafts were as thick as quarterstaves. The steel spearheads were sharp and thick for strength and bloodletting, and their fastening cupped the shafts and extended nearly a foot past the crosspiece. You'd suppose, Chirk told their raptly attentive lads, that a blade a hand span wide and a foot long would do for a boar, wouldn't you? The boys nodded certainly as they looked awestruck at the wicked spearhead that the giant hillman held, as if it were merely a toothpick. Well, you're wrong, Chirk continued. A maddened tusker will take this bit of steel in his chest without flinching, just to get at you. If this bar wasn't at the base of the blade, that tusker would push himself on, running the whole damn spear through his vitals, just to tear you to bloody ribbons with his tusks. Then he'd trample you into mush, before he fell dead on top of your guts and broken bones. There was certain relish in Chert's voice at this description of what could happen. Both Thatch and Shad turned pale and looked sick upon hearing this very graphic words. They were bright and imaginative lads, and they were now beginning to reconsider their desire to be boar-killing hunters. Chirk gave each a reassuring swat and spoke again. Never mind. There is a crosspiece, so if the shaft doesn't snap, the pig'll be held off to bleed himself to death in a squealing, foaming rage. It's their lust to kill that does for boars, you know. Now see the spike here at the butt. He moved the weapon so that the lads could get a close look at the metal-shod base. A finger-like spike protruded from the end cap. This is to hold the weapon solidly. You see the boar, it charges. You lower the spear and aim the point so. See how the butt is grounded. You can use a tree or the like, too, depending on where you are. No use when mounted, Gord pointed out. Clyde bow goes afoot, but boar spears for horse hunting are longer and lack the spike. Now notice the difference when you're fighting with this spear rather than setting up for a charging Husker, Chert said. And so it went for all that day and the next, while they kept a watch for signs of danger, and the outlaws rode through the forest. There were swine around, of that there was no doubt. They heard them and occasionally caught glimpses of the great wild pigs dashing away at their approach. Not attack, though, as even the Tuskers feared to encounter them. This disappointed the boys, and Chert too, for the hillmen still thought a loin of boar roasted over their evening fire would be most toothsome. It was the afternoon of the second day that brought their first incident. Chert was riding in the lead, Geller at the rear, and Gord and the boys going in between. As they rounded a corner where the game trail swerved past a massive yew and entered a small clearing, a piglet dashed across the path. Reflexively, Chert drew his bow and sped an arrow after the creature. The shaft pierced the piglet, which squealed shrilly as the projectile pinned it fast to the ground. There was another grunt and deeper squeal as the sow poked her head out from the brush. The barbarian had knocked another arrow, but before he could react, a deeper voice came from almost beside him. "A boar," Gord called, and he swung his spear down in the direction of the noise as he said it. There was a flash of reddish brown, a rigid back covered with bristles, and the impact as the spear point took the animal high on his shoulder. Although the boar was not large for his kind, no more than a few hundred pounds, and a bit over 3 feet high, he was a ferocious enough for the young thief. The impact nearly knocked Gord from his saddle, as the blade he had lowered plowed a deep furrow along the animal's back, before finally lodging in the beast's hindquarters and forcing the boar to the ground. The boar voiced his fury in terrible snorts and squeals, kicking himself erect and trying to slash horse and rider with his massive twisted tusks. Chert dared not spare an arrow on the creature, for at any time the sow, nearly as big as its mate, might charge too. Thatch and Shad acted before Geller could come to Gord's assistance. Although neither of the boys knew exactly what to do, they acted instinctively and stabbed at the boar's flank with their own weapons. The great animal threw himself toward these new tormentors, knocking both lads down by the force of his reaction. By then, however, Gord had let loose the shaft of the spear and whipped out his sword. It plunged into the boar's neck at the same instant that Geller's spear pierced the animal's evil heart, and the boar collapsed with a final shrill grunt. At that, the sow ran off, her line of sounders trailing behind her in a rush of squealing and grunting piglets, and was quickly lost in the forest. "Nice work," the big barbarian said. "That was a near thing, Gord," Geller commented. "Be more careful in the future, both of you," he admonished his friends. Then he eyed Thatch and Shad. They'd picked themselves up, brushed the dirt and leaves from their clothing, picked up their fallen spears, and now leaned upon them with expressions of a comical sort. Studied nonchalance and pride, intermingled with surprise at their own daring and fear, both of what could have happened to them and what their adult companions would say, fought with each other in varying and changing degree. Most of all, however, their desire for acceptance was evident. "You were brave, lads," Geller said, "but you were very lucky, too. Next time, remember what Chert and Gord have been teaching you." That broke the tension, and the two boys laughed and danced in ritual fashion around the dead boar, pretending to stab it, and placing their feet triumphantly upon the mammoth carcass. "Enough of that child's play," called Chert to the rollicking pair. "Go bring me that piglet. And mind you save the arrow, too," he added sternly. "When that's done, you're going to learn how to skin and dress pigs." They made camp early, and at last the brawny hillman got his fill of pork, both piglet and slices of boar. Eat as they did, all five of them, they could not make much of a dent in the succulent stuff. Pig meat would be on the bill of fare for quite a few meals to come, but they were happy to think of so dull a matter as that during or after the feast. Both Thatch and Shad proudly displayed a pair of tushes as they went on the next day. Gord had drilled the teeth and thronged them so that each boy had a necklace displaying a trophy. The hide and most of the meat was abandoned perforce. If they had tried to take the stuff, it would have spoiled in a day or two. Some creatures of the forest would eat well, and they had sufficient for today and tomorrow. They were still congratulating themselves when they came upon the mutilated corpse of a woman who had been killed only hours before. Just beyond the body was a well-beaten trail that ran north and south. Break. It's page 247 and the end of chapter 22. So we do get here some idea of how, you know, you could start with like zero level characters like these Thatch and Shad, and you know, you could develop them at least as fighters or druids or something, as being apprenticed to hunters. Very good. These two are gaining, you know, they're actually gaining experience because you have the two of them, even though the boar was already wounded by Gord. They actually got two strikes in at a living monster, and that should earn them. And in general, even if you don't do hit point to experience, that is a certainly an encounter that is helping to teach them. You also notice that they're both learning to ride. So we can see that Gygax is giving a good example of, say, zero-level characters starting their training, not in a very formal way, but definitely getting certain kinds of training that's going on. I was glad to see how Gygax explained the use of the boar spear, the cross piece, and the spike at the bottom of a spear to help secure it in a tree or in the ground. Finally, we get a little bit more of showing the story, because from the Obmi chapter that we were reading, we learned that the woman that Keek took from Stump was killed by the arboreal apes. And here we have, by luck or circumstance or by some kind of guidance, we have Gord and Chert and Gellert stumble upon the body itself and freshly killed. So that just shows that they're very near. Now, one of the things that also seems to me then is that we were talking about the location of Stump, and it definitely puts it much, much further to the northwest by the Vesvi Forest. Because that is, you know, the woman's taken out of Stump, I believe. And then suddenly, you know, I think it's got to be up on the Vesvi and nearer to where Tushim is, much closer than where they had Little Fountain Spring. And they had Stump really pretty much in the center of Furyundi. So I think we can pretty much see that the map isn't exactly right there.
Yeah, I think at one point yesterday it said they left Stump, and then in a few minutes of riding, they had entered the, you know, the beginnings of the forest.
Yeah, and that definitely is not where Stump is located on that map. And in, you know, in general discussion yesterday, I was bringing up, or in chat, actually in Cannon Fire chat, I was bringing up how the maps in various locations, as we remembered in the Adri Forest and around Nurl, the map locations were off. And then again here in Furiundi, between Melf at Boulder Ford, and you know, there's a fortification marked on the east of the Vang there. It doesn't make sense. There's a definite mileage between Littleburg and Broadford, and the bridge is about 10 miles, where it's easily 30 or 40 miles on that map. It's just the map that uses a lot of the second edition references, or even later Living Greyhawk campaign references, does not match up with this, you know, Gygax material. Even though this is a TSR book, and even though obviously they used some of this material in, you know, like From the Ashes and other things, it's definitely, there are big discrepancies between what Gygax is verbally describing, and then when you see it on the map, they don't match up.
Yeah, I'm not really sure about the later references, but I would go with Gygax's placement.
Yeah, I mean, unless, you know, I don't think there's too much confusion in this. I would say that, you know, it throws things off, being that this is a story, and the other things are setting material, but I would definitely be using the information gathered from this story, which is, you know, predates that other material. And also, when you get to something like this, where Stump obviously is not in the middle of Furiundi, you know, where it's, you know, where that's got to be the center of more, you know, more of their farming populations, like Fountain Spring is, and not all the way up. But and then the other thing is here, we've really learned that the borderland up here by the Vesvi is very wild, and the Vesvi is a, it's kind of like the Sus. It's a very dangerous forest. All right, I'm going to restart. It's page 249. And the beginning of chapter 23, the first paragraph. All right. Lossel's little Shad exclaimed in horror as he saw the awful remains. He ran away to the bushes, and shortly thereafter, the others heard sounds of vomiting. Kurt looked at the body and felt sickened himself, even as hardened to such things as he was. "What do you think, Gord?" he asked. "Teller is the one to ask," said the young adventurer, averting his eyes from the blood and gore. Why did he mention Lost Ones, Lossels, when he viewed this terrible thing that's been done? Bard asked Thatch. The boy stood and stared at the gruesome sight as if transfixed. If he heard Geller's question, Thatch made no reply. The bard took him firmly by the shoulders and turned him so that he faced away from the body and had to look at the man, whose kind expression bolstered him. "Come now, Thatch, my lad," said Geller softly. "It is terrible, I grant you, but as a hunter and treasure seeker, you'll have to grow to accept such sights. Just never like them." "Yes, sir," Thatch gulped and stammered, tears springing from his eyes. I can stand butchering and dressing, Master Geller, but what was done to that woman?" "Never mind that now. There's nothing we can do to save her. She's dead, and that's a fact. I want to know why Shad," cried Lossels when he saw the body. "Do you know why?" "We've heard it before, sir, in the village. We didn't see anything. They wouldn't show us. Just a week or so back, two of the local folk, a woodcutter and his wife, were found butchered most terribly. The priest of Foltus told us that Lossels did such work. But with the Devil Pig and the Lossels, nobody wanted to go far from Tushum lately. Neither lad knew exactly what Lossels were, although Shad said he had heard one of the village elders state that they were part man and part ape. Geller set all of them straight. "I have some small experience with them," he told his companions. "They are hybrid things. These Lossels are, that much is true. They're not human at all, though. The Lossel is a mixture of orc and boar mandrill, thick-furred northern baboons of vicious nature and sly cunning. Once we encountered a small tribe of them in the Felreeb Forest, but at that time I thought them a sport confined to that place. How do you know that the perpetrators of this foulness are actually Lossels, as the lad seems to believe?" Gord asked. "There seem to be no clues here." Now Shad had sufficiently composed himself to volunteer information. "It's the fingers. The Lossels take them," he managed to stammer. "That's just as we were told." "It's what I've seen before, Gord," agreed Geller. "It seems that these fiends are here in the Vesvay now, too, and that here they'd never have crossed westward. And that points directly at a purpose. If Uz didn't want these Lossels here, they'd never have crossed westward to this woodland from distant Felreeb. It's 100 leagues and more from there, the beginning of the upper forest, and we're no more than in the center of the place now." All right, break. So these are the orc ape men, and we learn that they're a certain kind of baboon, boar mandrill. So, you know, that's the typical kind. I believe they have Demogorgon as a two-headed giant mandrill demon. Now we get a lot of little bits of information here. The Lossels, they are native to the Felreeb, that they're not native here to the Vesvi, and only by, they think, from Geller's thought, is that Uz has now populated the Vesvi, or has had some group of these Lossels or ape orcs here, brought here to the Vesvi. Now, we get a little thing about Tushum. Not just the loss of the woodcutter and his wife, but that there is a priest of Foltis in Tushum. So that helps us flesh out a little more about it. And it's interesting that a Foltis priest. And here Chris is putting up the Lossel. Looks like it's from one of the later editions.
It's from Living Greyhawk Journal number 3.
All right, so we have the Lossel. I believe Lossel is actually, you know, a creature from our literature. I'm not sure, but it might be from Spenser's The Fairy Queen, as part of a monster inhabiting the Arthurian woods. There was also a Laurel and Hardy film called March of the Wooden Soldiers. And I think the monsters that are in that are actually called Lossels. So I think the Lossel is actually one of the, if not, you know, like a mythological creature, then a creature out of older fiction and poetry. You know, as the Fairy Queen's a giant poem by Edmund Spenser. All right. So, you know, right here we get, again, with this start of this chapter, we're showing how, you know, it's a good explanation when the players run into a new kind of creature that they're showcasing right here of how to relate, you know, and, you know, having one of the players, all it needs is one of the players or one of the NPCs to recognize the creature. And from then on out, the characters have some knowledge. It would be interesting. There used to be DM journals and player journals. And it would be interesting to learn when players encountered various monsters for the first time, so that later on they could recognize them when they encountered them again. Now, some creatures, like are shown in Saga the Old City, that Gorn, as a 12-year-old orphan in the slum quarter, had still been told tales of ogres and various other monsters, even though he had never encountered them. So some monsters are definitely going to be more common than others, and recognizable even to people who hadn't seen them in the flesh. All right.
I thought it was interesting that they said they were a combination of an orc and a mandrel.
Yes. And I did not think mandrel baboons would have been native to the Flaness. I would have thought that maybe they would have been from Hepmona land.
Or something.
Yeah, where you'd have more likely an encounter with them. All right, so I'm going to restart. All right, and it is page 250, and it is the second paragraph from the end. "Let's bury the remains," Church said harshly, "so he can be looking to even the score a bit with these orc apes." Not long after, they were moving rapidly up the hard-packed earth of the trail. The five went northward, Church trotting now, well in advance of the others. Gord, likewise dismounted, served as the rear guard. Thatch and Shad rode behind the bard, clutching their weapons and looking grim. They were rapidly changing from carefree village lads to hardened men, and the three adults didn't like the manner of their forced maturity. Unfortunately, there was nothing they could do to soften the shock of such experiences, and they knew that worse was in the offing. About an hour after noon, Chert ran back and signaled a halt. Gord hurried ahead to join the group and hear what the barbarian had to report. "I got a glimpse of a foraging party ahead," said Chert. "About five or six rogues wearing forest green. They didn't see me at all, though, for they were busy toting a stag they'd brought down. One of them was bitching about not getting a fair share of the kill, so I'd say that there must be a big bunch of his pals up ahead. Not too far ahead, either." Gellert didn't seem surprised. "This path is too hard and beaten to reveal much, although the marks of the horses some ride stand out clearly enough. Any idea how many there might be?" "Not really," the barbarian said. "Although the way the tracks are spread to either side of the trail, I'd make a stab at a party of more than a score. Could be two or three times that many, though." "Let's stay back for now," Gord suggested. "Tonight I'll see about finding a member of that bunch who'll tell us what we need to know." Shad was puzzled. "How'll you do that, Master Gord? There aren't going to be any of them who'll want to talk to us to help us." "They will after I bring them back here and persuade them a bit," Gord said in an offhand manner. "Persuade?" queried Thatch. "Sure," Chert said to the boy with a wink, and then made a stabbing and twisting with his hand. "Persuade." Both boys looked greenish, until they recalled the corpse of the woman these outlaws had left behind. Then they nodded eagerly in agreement. "That sounds like a splendid plan," they chimed. The five resumed their march, going more slowly now. Chert was on full alert for other foragers, stragglers, or a squad coming south to make certain the back trail was free of enemies. Whether by luck or carelessness on the part of the band they followed, there was no incident. Near dusk, Chert and Gord changed places. A barbarian stayed behind with the horses, and the two boys, while Gord and Geller moved on up the track to determine how close their enemies might be. Neither was unaware of the danger into which they were heading, but this didn't slow either one or inhibit their determination. At last they were coming to grips with the enemy, and it might well be the one whom they sought, so long at that. Only let it be so. About a mile from where they had left their comrades and their horses, the two scouts heard noise, albeit faint sounds that seemed to come from ahead and above. Gord peered in the direction of the rustling and muttering, being careful to conceal his body behind a tree bole. He saw movement. "Damn," he said softly, pointing toward the leafy branches ahead as he did so. "I see them," Geller whispered in reply. Several man-like shapes were visible amid the upper portions of a pair of trees that stood on either side of the trail. "Lossels. Must be sentries," he mouthed. Gord motioned, and both men retreated a few yards to where they couldn't be seen or heard by the arboreal guards. "The main party must have called a halt to the night for the night," Gord commented. "Even though most of them can probably see as well in the dark as in daylight, the dangers of attack by predators are great enough to make those bastards take shelter until dawn." "I agree," Geller said to his friend. "Do you still want to try grabbing one of them?" Gord nodded resolutely. "Let's see about their precautions elsewhere. We can circle around to the left and work our way back here if possible. In the process, we can take advantage of any weakness we find." "Should we wait for full darkness?" the bard asked. "That will come soon enough," Gord said. "And I am no more eager than those outlaws are to meet some night-prowling monster out after brigand or orc meat for a snack. You've more experience in the woods, such as these, than I do. Geller, what are we likely to meet?" The bard looked at Gord with raised eyebrows. "The way you've been going, I was beginning to think that you were a ranger as well as thief, acrobat, and swordsman," he said with mock surprise. "And doing well enough at it, too." "I must say, no mockery at all, my friend. You are doing well. I'm a bit more accustomed to court intrigues or battlefield than to such stuff as this. But I did roam a few forests in my younger days. The Vesvi is unfamiliar to me, though. For all I know, there could be bears and lions, or barguests and dragons, and everything in between tossed in for good measure. Still, from what I've seen so far, this place is most likely for were-swine and wild lossels, with who knows what else." "Big help," Gord said with a thin smile. "Consult a sage next time," shot back Geller immediately. "Let's get moving," Gord said, seeing no useful direction to continue the exchange, for both of them were tense and ready to quarrel uselessly. "It is dark enough here on the ground, and light enough above to give us the advantage over those arboreal sentries." Geller nodded agreement, and the two began moving in silently through the forest, circling the enemy encampment at a half-bowshot distance. At first they could move with relative speed, for the light from above made it possible to spot the lossels with ease. Every other tree seemed to have a pair of the creatures roosting within its branches. After they had completed a quarter of the circuit of the outlaw bivouac, the last light failed, and then they moved more slowly. We are nearing the path again, the bard said in a voice no louder than the rustle of some leaf disturbed by a mouse. Gord could see the faint gleam of Geller's enchanted ocular, and the young thief wondered how such vision compared with the power bestowed upon his seeing by the cat's eye ring he wore. Gord pointed just ahead, crouching low as he did so. The bard did likewise. Almost before Gord sank low, for a body of humanoids was moving quietly down the trail, heading south toward their camp. Geller began to slink toward the pathway, moving very fast, but making almost no noise at all. This was from his early training in the craft of thievery, thought Gord, as he emulated the bard's progress, only covering more distance than he did without any discernible sound at all. I truly emulate him, thought Gord thereafter. All of his senses were alert only for sign of enemy. There were perhaps a score of mixed humanoids ahead of them. The tall forms were certainly gnolls. The bulky ones probably were orcs, and those that shambled were lossals. All humanoids could see fairly well in the night, for their eyes were sensitive to heat as well as normal light. The party was moving at a walk and traveling faster than either man could. Soon the humanoids would be out of sight. Time to become members of that raiding party, Geller hissed, as he made for the path at a quickened pace. Hunch yourself and strut like a baboon. Perhaps they'll believe us to be lossals guarding the rear, Gord murmured. Then they were onto the hard-packed ground of the track and swinging in a loping strut after the score of humanoids already out of sight. There came no warning call from behind, and the two managed to close with the group ahead without difficulty. They had covered about half the distance between the enemy camp and the place they had left Chert and his two charges. Something had to be done quickly. I'll use druidical spells, Geller whispered as he hunched along beside his comrade. This will cause confusion, but little harm to these killers. So when I work the deomers, be ready to do what you can to make them think that there is serious danger. I'll be ready, Gord said, and then he loped closer to the pair of orcish crossbow-armed humanoids who brought up the rear of the column. As he came near, one of them turned and grunted something to Gord that he couldn't understand. Not knowing whether it was the orcish language or just sounds, Gord grunted and waved his arm in the direction from which the humanoid band had come, bouncing as he did this. Uncertain, the man-orc, who had turned to see who came, stopped his march, and so hid his mate. Both peered backward to where a form could be seen. That was Geller, Gord knew, working at the casting of a spell to confound these creatures. At the sight of this, both humanoids brought up their already cocked weapons and prepared to shoot their bolts. While the two were peering intently toward the direction of their own camp to find what their supposed lossal comrade was warning them about, Gord was acting. He drew both of his recently acquired throwing knives and hurled them one after another with all his strength and skill toward the retreating backs of the next humanoids in the column. This took but seconds. The two with crossbows thought he was simply gyrating in apish fashion, or thought nothing at all, intent as they were on aiming at their target. Even as his blades were hurtling toward the unsuspecting humanoids, the young thief grabbed one of the half-orcs and spun him. The stupid lout was facing southward before he knew what happened. and as his fingers squeezed convulsively on the weapon's trigger, he gave a shout of surprise. A Knoll turned quickly at that, and took the buzzing bolt full in its eye. Following this, with motion too rapid for the eye to discern, Gord threw himself down and struck the other man-orc's legs. The humanoid, already distracted, discharged his quarrel upward so that it whipped through the leaves and twigs before burying itself harmlessly in a distant tree limb. The startled fellow never had the opportunity to know what had happened, for Gord's sword slew him in the next instant. Suddenly, there were screams from the head of the column, now about 30 or 40 paces distance. In the interval between Gord and the main body, several things were happening. The crossbow-wielding half-orc stood stupidly, looking at the work he had done, for the wounded Knoll was writhing and screaming on the path. Gord's knives had done some damage as well, for another orcish humanoid was down, and the one who had walked beside him was bending over the injured one, removing a knife from where it protruded from the orc's shoulder. One quick glance backward told him that Geller was still at his spell working. Gord unsheathed his dagger and set about his own labor, striking down the man-orc offhandedly in the process. The head of the column had evidently run into something very nasty and painful. Now they were turning in confusion at the cries and shouts from behind. Ducking low, the young thief darted ahead and stabbed at the pair of orcs next in line. As he did so, a tall, hyena-faced Knoll leaped into the melee, eager to kill whoever dared to assault his fellows. Gord shoved the orc, who had taken a wound from his knife, violently backward, meanwhile withdrawing his sword from the corpse of the other humanoid. Orc and Knoll collided momentarily, becoming entangled, and they separated and came for him. Gord met the rush, but was brought down under the weight of the two humanoids. A moment later, a Lossal leaped into the fray from a nearby tree limb, adding to the confusion that already existed. Although he took a vicious bite on the leg, Gord could not be pinned down by weight or grip, as the attacking humanoids discovered to their immense chagrin. The young thief seemed to squirt from the heap of struggling bodies, stabbing with dagger and slashing with short sword as he came free. He sprang up, thrust both blades randomly into the mass before him, and then leaped and rolled to a position off the trail. Huge arrows from the bows of the infuriated Knoll archers sank into the three humanoids attempting to rise and follow their slippery adversary. In an instant, these three already wounded creatures were done for, pierced by the shafts of their own fellows. Almost a third of the enemy were accounted for, dead or wounded, and some certain harm had come to those at the head of the company. What more to do? Get away, thought Gord, as he heard a loud commotion to the north and realized that the main camp was sending more troops to help the party under attack. The young thief made a dash for escape, angling slightly toward the humanoid encampment, but away from the pathway through the forest's heart. He kept very low and used every bit of brush and tree trunk to cover his movements. Quarrels and arrows whizzed through the woods, but they seemed to be released at random. After covering about 50 paces, Gord halted and made a soft hooting noise, prearranged recognition signal that he and his friends had agreed to when they entered the forest. When no answering hoot came, but branches near the trail thrashed and bent. Gord moved quickly onward. Geller would be able to fend for himself, and the Lossels, anyway, were still looking for those who had attacked their band. Much shouting and noise of running feet could be heard along the trail, and Gord knew that a considerable reinforcement was coming up. The humanoids might still go on, and there was no need for silent attack any longer. Gord remembered the inspelled acorns that Curly Greenleaf had given him long before, and dug the pair of nuts out of his pouch. Giving a silent prayer to nature that the missiles would retain their power, he slung both in rapid succession toward the noise and crashing of brush that came from near the trail. Gord remembered to shut his eyes and avert his gaze even as he whipped the second of the two acorns toward the chosen area. The first one burst before he could manage to shield his eyes. There was a flash that momentarily revealed a mass of humanoid shapes, a sheet of fire and screaming curses. Then all was totally black. Gord's tightly shut eyelids had sparks and floating balls of light inside them, but his ears heard the second missile burst, followed by more cries and oaths. He fell flat on his belly and crawled as rapidly as he could, heading in the direction that he was sure was directly away from the enemy. After a minute or two of worming his way, Gord halted and allowed his breathing to slow to its normal rate. Then he willed it even lower and listened. His vision would be useless for some time yet, but his ears were functioning perfectly. There was a lot of noise behind him, so he gave a little sigh of relief. At least he had managed to do that right. What the young thief heard indicated that the humanoids now had officers who were setting about their work with precision and discipline. Orders were shouted and responses made. Squads were beginning to beat the bushes. There were Lossels in the trees, an enemy and more climbing up from the sound of it. Gord surmised that the enemy encampment must have encountered not a few score of humanoid. Must have contained not a few score of humanoids, but hundreds. The attack on their scouting and raiding party had merely stirred them up. Well, no hope for that. And at worst, Chert and the lads with him would have a chance to get the hell out of the way of the swarm of enemies coming back along the trail. Suddenly, the order of the search was disrupted. There were sounds of terrible squeals and gruntings, crashing of vegetation, and even the shouts and screams of the humanoids. They had evidently disturbed more than one wild boar. And the huge pigs were attacking savagely. Gord's exceptional vision was returning now, and he looked toward the commotion as he stood up and prepared to slip eastward, and then head back south toward his own camp. Energy glowing and crackling was playing about the area. Now Gord cursed, for his special vision was again ruined for minutes, but his normal sight allowed him to judge that at least two magic users were plying their arts against the ravening swine. Time and more to be gone, no question. Gord gripped his enchanted short sword tightly, allowing the power of the blade to surge upward. He could see just as humanoids and demihumans saw, now, a strange illumination of things warm and cold, It was inferior to the power of sight that his ring bestowed, but it was not clouded by the exposure to light from the magical missiles and bolts he had just seen. With this sight, he managed to escape the ongoing battle and slip southwards without detection by the enemy. All right, break. We're on page 258, and quite a bit of action in the story. There's, you know, really not that much lore that we're encountering because there's so much action, but we do get an example of the Lossels. As the story goes, it seems that most of these half-orcs and Lossels and even gnolls, that they're all, you know, comparatively to Gord, they're all fairly low level. So even though they're able to rush Gord, knock him off his feet, his skill and dexterity, which has increased because of, you know, like that cat's eye ring, he is able to pop up and, you know, just his blades are between the short sword and the bonuses and the long tooth dagger. He is just bringing these lower level creatures down one after another. It looks like Lossels are not very powerful, according to this, you know, this write-up here. And it doesn't seem like they are. They seem very much to be just, even though they're baboon orcs, they still seem to be mostly the low-level orcs, and these half-orcs don't seem to be too well-trained in any kind of character class. Yeah, it looks like they're just 1d8 and... And this write-up has them with certain hit points, which are very low. Actually, you know, they're so low level that just one knife stroke from Gord with all his benefits would probably kill them. And he's fighting short sword and long tooth dagger. So, you know, he is, but Gord himself has carved his way through at least, sounds like at least half a dozen you know, of the various half-orcs and gnolls that are part of that raiding group. But it is, we have gotten the idea then that the main group is now, is actually a rather large group going into hundreds rather than just scores or dozens. So, we get, there's very little, not now that they've, the saving grace here for them is that this main group has stirred up these boars. And I believe the boars are supposed to be, you know, quite a deal stronger individually than the orcs or the orcs or the Lossels or the gnolls. So if there is like a little colony, let alone maybe the devil pig, they can do quite a bit of damage to the, you know, the large band of Lossels and such that are leading Obmi up the Vesve. All right, we're getting near the end of the night, but I'm going to restart right here. And we are on the second paragraph on page 258. Oh, no, I'm sorry, the third paragraph. Because he knew what to look for, Gord had no difficulty finding where his friends had gone. The original site they had chosen was deserted, of course, for Chort could not have failed to hear all the ruckus to the north, and acted accordingly. The horses left a distinct trail if you knew that three had been in the place once. There were no droppings around, and a scent of nettles masked odors in the place. The tracks had been brushed hurriedly, but well enough. Gord grinned in admiration as he envisioned the flurry of activity that must have accompanied the process. The hoof marks led eastward, winding between the massive trees, and then turned south to parallel the trail at 200 or so yards. After a couple of minutes, Gord could hear the faint sounds of hooves in men. He again gave the low hooting call, and this time there was a soft reply from ahead. Then another came from behind. Gord froze, pretending to be a tree. A soft footfall came. Then the swishing sound of a disturbed bush. Another followed the tracks left. But was it friend or foe? Gord heard a snuffling almost at the same time. A repeated hoot came from ahead. Shut up. He sent this thought wildly in Chert's direction. Even as he stared back toward the soft sniffling noise, he saw a lossal bent close to the ground, traveling on all fours, while another of its unnatural kind followed closely. The second creature was alertly watching for any enemies, as its fellow followed the scent. The challenge was to kill both before either could alert other humanoids nearby. The snuffling one was sure to detect his presence momentarily, so Gord had no time to plan. He simply acted and hoped. Gathering himself without a sound, Gord sprang as if he were a two-legged cat. As he landed, he brought the point of his sword squarely down upon the crouching orc ape. It sunk to the hilt into the creature's exposed back, but the young thief allowed himself no glance at the result. He was upon the second lossal in the same motion that it had enabled him to pierce the first. The creature had turned its head to survey the surrounding area as the two sought their prey. Gord had sprung when he saw this, and the upright ape orc had no time to utter a cry. His long poniard bit into the creature's throat even as it raised its short club and struck at the attacking human. The bludgeon stunned Gord, and the two antagonists fell together, the lossal snapping and tearing at Gord with its dying ferocity. As the young man locked his fingers around the beast's throat and squeezed with all his might to prevent any utterance from its foul throat, the nails digging into his flesh ceased their jet pressure, and the lossal's jaws opened in a gurgle of death. Alright, I'm going to break here. It's page 259. We're going to stop here for the night as we've just a few minutes left. Chris has put up the the Monstrous Compendium. Oh, from the Ashes. A Monstrous Compendium sheet about the Lossal. Now, we have them as two hit dice here with three attacks. But still, Gord, if he is doing backstabbing, he is so high level that his advantage of damage in backstabbing here is, I don't know, four, five, even six times the normal damage. And he gets other benefits. So really, he is like a one-shot kill on these Lossals. Now, they've drawn them more like, in this drawing, they're much more like humanoid baboons than they are like the orc apes they're described as in this book. So again, we've gone through quite a bit of storyline.
Hello, and welcome to Tavern Chat.
Sorry about that. clicked the wrong button there. We've gone through quite a bit of story, and really, you know, there's some stuff about the Lossals. We get that they hunt on all fours. They have a powerful tracking ability, maybe all scent-related. And, you know, that's useful stuff, but this is not like a heavy lore section. It's in the Vesvi, but it's really not actually... Most of the creatures we're encountering are as foreign to the Vesvi forest as Gord and Chert and Geller. We really don't get anything more too much about what the Vesvi would be like. Just that there's this thick forest. There are trails through it, like the one they're following, and which these humanoids are following up. An exciting section here but nothing particularly new, you know, as far as the lore of Greyhawk. And as far as the story, you know, it takes us into this fight, but it really doesn't. They've discovered the humanoids. We don't know if Obmi and Keek are with them. It seems suggestive that there are two magic users, one of whom I'd assume would be Keek. And with characters such as Keek and Obmi, unless they're running into that devil swine, it doesn't sound like those boars would slow them down very much.
The first post about the Lossals, it does say that Uz has been recruiting and breeding Lossals. So, I mean, that might be another indicator that Obmi is around.
Yes, although you know, it's earlier on mentioned that this force doesn't mention the Lossals in particular. But very earlier on, it was mentioned that there would be a force coming to find Obmi and the second artifact and escort him out of there. And they actually encounter them in Stump, you know, that small group without the Lossals, but then the Lossals joined them, you know, outside of Stump. It just seems, though, that Stump has got to be on the very, either, you know, as very close to the southern Vesvi, or even further up more toward Tushim. And it is a little surprising that probably this trail that leads from Tushim deeper into the Vesvi is probably a normal hunting trail, either broken down by the wild boar or by the hunters after them.
Because that's where the boys are from, right, Tushim?
Yes, yes, they're actually more of the Vesvi than anybody else in this area. Now, right. It's mentioned that the Lossals, Geller thinks that these Lossals are exports from the Felreeve forest, you know, and that, you know, I guess Uz is probably breeding them in the northern part of the forest up by his lands. All right, so I'm going to end it for today, invite Craig. We're already past 7, and... bring back Craig just to kick him out here. All right, and say goodnight to everyone.
Hopefully
this was an enjoyable little section, but it was all action, action, action.
Yeah, it was good.